Hello and welcome everybody to another episode of the World's Greatest Podcast. It is, of course, That's the Way the Cookie Crumbles. Have you missed us? Of course you've missed us. And someone that's missing this week, Stan, Jim is not here. As you can tell, listeners, from a distinct lack of mouth breathing, Jim is not here. But Stan, where is he this week?
Well, he's currently in Abu Dhabi, as we know. He likes a little holiday there. And he's currently fighting for the fans against record ticket prices following the banner on the weekend. As we know, ticket prices is where City fans draw the line now. So, yeah, Jim's over there fighting for City's fans' rights.
Speaking of rights, Stan, I deserve the right to have 90 minutes back of my life for this game. It was so boring for a lot of it. I remember at halftime saying, for the big game of the weekend, for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, it was, of course, Man City hosting Arsenal at the Etihad Stadium. And Stan, it was a massively lackluster game, given the amount of media attention, obviously, it deservedly needed. But do you think this was a game of teams not wanting to lose, as opposed to teams that were like, yeah, we need to actually win it?
I think so, yeah. I think either of them would have been a little bit wary of losing. But, you know, you're in a title race. You're 2-3. Liverpool won earlier on, which we'll talk about. And, you know, they needed to win. I think particularly Arsenal needed to win. It was at the Etihad and they've not won there for the best part of 10 years. But, you know, I think Arsenal needed to win. And what was the 3 shots on target altogether and about 1,000 passes? I just thought it was a really, really bad game. I think it actually, not to go too extremist, too full on, but I think it actually summed up quite a lot of what's wrong with elite football, in my opinion, at the moment. I thought it was a focus on don't concede, let's keep possession, let's do nice short passes, let's be nice and compact, let's not take any risks, let's not take a man on, let's not have a long shot. Instead of having a long shot, let's turn around and give it to our defensive mid and then recycle it. And it's just like, somebody fucking do something. And it was one of them where you're chilling or doing something, you have it on, and like when the commentator gets excited, you might look up or have a look, see what's happening. And because I had it like that, I think I looked up a grand total of about 3 times during the 90 minutes. It was a really, really bad game. And like you say, for the amount of hype, really, really disappointing, especially with some of the big games we've seen this season. I mean, if you compare that to the FA Cup game between United and Liverpool, it was absolutely night and day. You know, maybe that's a cup game, it changes things, somebody's got to win. But I just thought it was really bad. I mean, 3 shots on target for 2 teams going for the title at the end of March. Yeah, just really disappointing.
Yeah, it was. And it wasn't a great advert for the Prem in terms of what everyone's been used to, the rock and roll side of it. It was a very much a tactical game this week. And Stan, one thing I want to ask you about this game, Pep and Arteta, obviously very similar, cut from the same cloth. Do you think that if Arsenal did lose this game, it was title race over, really? And obviously now with it being in Liverpool's hands, which we'll touch on later, it's business as usual, really, for City now. Nothing changes for them. It's still them in the business end of the season where they need to put a run together, and they haven't really done that yet.
Yeah, I think if either team had to not lose it, it was probably Arsenal. I think if City lost, I think they're still more likely to go and do a title challenge. I think if Arsenal lost, I mean, it would have pushed Liverpool and City away from them. And I think Arsenal have the tougher run of fixtures out of the 3 as well. So I think in terms of not losing, it was probably more important for Arsenal, which again is probably maybe even more disappointing that City could have risked a bit more. They were the home team as well. I mean, it's the first time they've not scored at home for like nearly 3 years or something in a league game. And I wouldn't say that's because they had chance after chance and they were missing it. Just nothing happened. Arsenal sat compact, similarly to how United did. And obviously because they're a better team, they ended up coming out with a 0-0. United ended up conceding, you know, 3 goals in the second half. But I thought it was a nothing game. I thought it was really disappointing for second and third in the league, and this being, I think, the last time any of the top 3 will play each other for the rest of the season. So, yeah, I think Arsenal, probably more important that they didn't lose it more than they won it, but, you know, it doesn't make it any less disappointing that it was a drab 0-0.
Yeah, and if Arsenal had lost this game against Man City, they've got Luton at home, then Brighton away, Bayern Munich at home, Aston Villa at home, and then Bayern Munich away, followed by Wolves away. And then they've got a bit of a torrid fixture list. They've got Chelsea at home, which they should really win that game. But then they've got Spurs away, who really will be doing anything to stop them from winning the league. So the fixtures are coming thick and fast for Arsenal, Stan. And the squad, really, they've not had that many serious injuries this season other than Uri and Timber in the Community Shield that I can really think of where someone's been out for a prolonged period of time that is of significant importance to the team. I'm not counting someone like Emile Smith-Rowe or Fabio Fierro or anyone like that. But, like, yeah, they've not had a massive injury, but this now will test the limit of that squad and see if they really learned from last season, because last season they went out of, I believe it was the Europa League they went out of. I can't remember who they went out to. Was it Porto?
Porto, yeah, I think it was. Or Sporting Lisbon. It was one of the Portuguese teams, wasn't it?
But yeah, have they learned from last season? That's really what I'm wanting to ask you, Stan. Do you think that they will learn from the lessons of last season? And let's be real, Bayern Munich aren't exactly Bayern Munich of what we're really used to. And they've got a manager that couldn't really care less what happens. And he's already won a Champions League. So again, he's going to get paid regardless. So what are Bayern's motivations there?
Yeah, I mean, Arsenal are probably the team least affected again out of the three. I mean, yesterday the commentator mentioned before the game they were only really missing Timber from the whole squad. So, you know, they had pretty much a first-choice squad to choose from yesterday, which, again, I keep mentioning it, makes it, again, even more disappointing. They've rocked up at the Etihad. Probably a win would be so big, not only for the points, but for the confidence there and a decent run of form and being the team to beat City at City, that, you know, they turned up and did nothing ultimately. But yeah, look, they'll look at Bayern. It's not a vintage Bayern side. There's not many vintage sides. I mean, it's not a vintage Madrid side at the moment. It's probably Arsenal and City might be the two favourites. I know they're on the same side, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see whether they've learnt the lessons. But I mean, it's a perfect situation for them with so little injuries, so little long term injuries as well. That, you know, if they are going to do anything on either front, you know, they need to keep that group together and learn from anything that happened last season. But I mean, Kurt, let me ask you a question. If it gets to it, and Arsenal are in the, I don't know, semi-final of the Champions League, and then they have a big game on the Sunday and they're still 2 points off top, and they've got to put their eggs in one basket, what basket do you think they would choose? A Premier League title challenge or a Champions League final?
I think that Arsenal fans are that deluded that they will prioritise the Champions League. And I say that deluded because they actually believe that they've got unfinished business in that competition from Paris in 2006. And I say this because I live with an Arsenal fan, so it's not just me spouting hyperbole. I have spoken to him about this and I asked him, would you rather run City and Liverpool down to the last day, or would you really like to go deep in the Champions League? And he's like, Champions League, 100%. Why? Because you've won the Prem. That's what he says. He's won the Prem. So again, they're deluded enough to think, oh, we'll just go for the Champions League like they're a super team. They're not. They're Arsenal. And they, like I said, if they get a few injuries, it could all come crumbling down. But don't get me wrong, they're playing class. They're overachieving. But again, is it going to be deja vu for Arsenal this season? And have they got people that really, when it's not going well for them, can pull them out of the shit? They have so far, but now they're going to play the big boys. And obviously, in the Champions League, the teams are really good. But now the Prem, you can't really make a mistake now. You've got to be flawless to win it now, and especially with it being in Liverpool's hands, Stan. And we'll move on to Liverpool. They beat Brighton 2-1 at Anfield, Stan. Brighton did give them a bit of a scare at times. I thought Liverpool in the first half, Stan, were definitely there for the taking, and Danny Welbeck scored an absolute peach of a goal, to be fair to him as well. But yeah, a bit disappointed by Brighton in the end. Definitely a game of two halves.
Yeah, it was. I mean, Liverpool, you know, they were struggling down their own right-hand side with Adingra was getting down there, and that's obviously where the goal came from a few minutes into the game with Welbeck with a great strike, that guy, making it 1-0 to Brighton. But I thought, yeah, the second half changed, completely flipped. So I thought McAllister, especially against his old club, was brilliant yesterday, involved in both goals, I believe. So it was... Yeah, it was a massive win for Liverpool, especially with the game later on that ended up being a draw. I mean, that 3 points then becomes even more impressive. I think Salah had a record for shots. I think he had 11 or 12 shots or something on his own, which was ridiculous, but he still gets his goal. I guess as the saying goes, you just can't give this guy 11 chances. And Salah made the goal, and he got the goal that was 2-1 with a great move, Szoboszlai into McAllister.
McAllister into Salah 2-1. Diaz had a goal disallowed as well for offside, rightfully this time, not like at the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. But Liverpool held on. I think it was a bit of a basketball game for the last 10 minutes, which I'm sure Klopp and Liverpool fans hated. But like I say, most important thing is that Liverpool got the 3 points before the big game, put themselves first and in the driving seat for the title.
Definitely put themselves in the driving seat. And one of the headlines that I saw, Stan, and this will make you cringe, it was the clocks go forward and Klopp goes back to first place in the Premier League. I did feel sick when I saw that a little bit. But the facts are the facts. Liverpool are top of the league, is in their hands. And Liverpool seem to be getting players back at the right time now. Their squad being held together probably by very, very... what do I want to say? The players that they've had out injured, they've really weathered that storm. That's what I'm trying to be very complimentary of Liverpool, because they have dealt with injuries very well this season, and the young players coming through they've definitely excelled and exceeded expectations. But Stan, they've got a European run themselves, obviously in the Europa League, that we know again of two boys, products of the Europa League, you could say. We've experienced it. We know how daunting it is that Thursday, Sunday. And obviously with Liverpool's injuries, that could genuinely affect them in the title race going forward. It's not as easy as we can just play two different 11s, because at this point in the competition, it's not realistic to do that, is it?
No, it's not. But I suppose what they do have is, unlike Arsenal and City, they do have the option to still rest. And if they go out, they go out. It's not the end of the world. You're going out the Europa League, and it could be a huge blessing in disguise that with then playing one game a week, with obviously them going out of the FA Cup as well. It's just going to be straight Premier League then for the next however many games left of the season. So could be a blessing in disguise, whereas obviously Arsenal and City, they need to be strong on both fronts. So, Thursday, Sunday's difficult. And if Liverpool decide to try and go all the way in both, that could make them come unstuck. But I suppose the beauty is, even if they do end up going out, then, you know, it's not the Premier competition. It's not the worst thing in the world. And if anything, it's only going to help them in their title charge. So, we'll see. If it was me, I'd be doing not major rotations, not two different 11s, like you say, but I'd definitely be resting the key players, maybe the likes of Van Dijk and Salah and people like that wouldn't be starting for me, I don't think, on any of the Thursday nights now, between now and the end of the season, unless obviously they do end up making it to the final, which could be against obviously Xabi Alonso's Bayer Leverkusen, who's recently said he's staying. So that's a bit of a blow for Liverpool at the moment, whilst everything seems to be on a high with the Klopp's going back to the top of the table. But we'll see. But I'll ask you, Cut, now we've spoken about all three. Liverpool are in the driving seat, I suppose. I mean, it's probably a little bit too much pressure given the fact they are only 2 points and 3 points clear of City and Arsenal, respectively. So it's not like the, you know, this time last year, Arsenal were, what, 8 points clear of City with 9 games left. It's still, you know, this time next week, it could be a different order kind of thing. Do you genuinely think Liverpool are the title favourites now, as the bookies do?
No, I don't. I think City are still the favourites just because of the evidence that they've put forward in the past three seasons and halfway through this season, or should I say three quarters through this season, because, like I said, they've still not put that run together, and they always do. And like I said, I can only go off the data that I've been given beforehand, and nothing's changed at the helm with City to make me think, you know what, it's fell off now, that's it. Pep's really lost them now, they're burnt out. Whereas I think Klopp's literally doing everything at the moment. I think he was very calculated in announcing when he was leaving, even though they knew in November, right before a cup final, to give him that extra oomph because he knew they were depleted. I think that he was very clever in to do that. And I also think at the same time, with Liverpool and City obviously going neck and neck and neck, I don't think Arsenal will obviously... Oh God, it's hard to say. It's hard to say this objectively, but I genuinely don't think that Arsenal will be a contender in the next 3 weeks. I genuinely don't. I think that in the next 3 weeks, it'll go from a three-horse race to a two-horse race. And I think that Arsenal fans will be saying, well, yeah, we can prioritise on the Champions League now, because I think they will beat Bayern as well. So I think that that will almost be their silver lining. But no, I think City will win it. I think Pep will make history because, like I said, I've not seen anything from City that makes my alarm bells go off and think, yeah, the wheels are falling off. But don't get me wrong, Liverpool now are, they're overachieving in terms of, like, again, with the injuries, but also they're all trying to do it for Klopp because it's his last season, and obviously he's a legacy manager at that football club, and they're all playing for a shirt next season because they don't know who the new guy is, because no one knows who the new guy is, which is quite strange in a managerial merry-go-round, Stan, because there's reports of Anarim, who's the guy up at Sporting, if you don't know him. Xabi Alonso obviously staying at Leverkusen, probably waiting one more year for Real Madrid, a lot of people speculating. But yeah, Stan, who do you think takes the job at Liverpool just before we move on to the bet of the week?
I mean, I would have 100% said it was Alonso. But obviously hearing that, he's staying at Leverkusen. I then thought, well, it'll probably be De Zerbi. And Ornstein come out yesterday saying he doesn't think it'll be De Zerbi who they get. Although I don't think that was a bad interview that he did at Anfield yesterday. I think it was one of the toughest games at Anfield for a while. Really, you know, hard fought 3 points for them. I'm honestly struggling. I mean, after that, who are you looking at? I'm not sure many clubs will be touching Nagelsmann this summer unless he ends up maybe back at Bayern. He's been there before. So and the reason I say that is obviously not because I doubt his managerial prowess. It's more because he's a German national team manager, and there's a chance that he only meets whatever group at some point in July, with the season starting in August. So you'd have a month there to meet the lads, assess it, bring in players that you want, agree that, get some tactics bedded in. You know, it's not going to be long enough at a club that is brand new to him. I think maybe he could get away with it at Bayern with him only being there 2 years before. He probably knows a lot of the lads there anyway and the strengths and weaknesses, so that probably makes the most sense for him. Maybe Amarim, although I think that's probably going to be a lot of compensation. I think if anybody wants to get him out of Sporting Lisbon, is it best? It's about 15 million or something, is it? So, you know, it's whether Liverpool want to pay that. After that, are you taking a punt on somebody like Graham Potter, Southgate, or do you go a little bit left field and do Liverpool switch to a back three and try and get Simone Inzaghi in from Inter Milan, or do they want to try and stick to it as close as a Jurgen Klopp style of play as they have, in which case Inzaghi's not your man? So I don't think they would have decided yet. I think because Barca want a coach, Bayern want a coach, Liverpool obviously themselves want a coach, United might want a coach, Chelsea might want a new coach. So there's going to be so many clubs looking for that new head coach that, I mean, some, you might not even be getting your first, second, third choice. You might be looking at a fourth choice if other clubs obviously approach and it suits them before you even get to have that conversation. So I don't know. I would guess Amarim, just because I would have said Alonso, and if not Alonso, De Zerbi, but both of them have been written off by obviously reliable sources. So I'll go for Ruben Amarim. Maybe they'll take a risk on him, but I think he also plays a back three. Don't think it's an Inzaghi back three, but it's still a back three that he focuses on. So maybe a slight change of tactics there at Anfield.
Yeah, and someone, correct me if I'm wrong, Stan, Pep Linders, I don't think we've mentioned this guy. A lot of Liverpool fans think that this is maybe the sensible option. It would definitely be the cheap option, so it really wouldn't put it past them, FSG, in my opinion, Stan, if this was the route they went to. And they were almost telling him, basically, Klopp's kind of grooming him for the role while he's in the role as well, if that makes sense.
Yeah, although we did hear, didn't we, when Klopp was going, that his entire backroom staff would be going as well. So I think for Pep to, for it to turn around and him to end up staying, I'm sure he'd also want a few heads to stay there with him. I don't think he'd bring in brand new. So maybe a U-turn there.
Alonso, though, do you think that that's maybe potentially going to change now that Alonso's definitively said that he's staying for one more year?
Potentially, but I'd be surprised if they announced that they were all leaving before, because obviously Alonso, I don't think he's gone, I'm leaving, then all of a sudden said, no, I'm staying. I think he's probably thought, I'm staying at Leverkusen for at least another year the whole time. So I'm assuming they've been having conversations, in which case I don't think Liverpool would have jumped the gun and said, you know, these are all leaving because we fully expect Alonso. And if they did, then, you know, that plan's completely out the window. So maybe a U-turn with Pep Linders staying in. I mean, it might not be the worst thing in the world for, you know, give it 12 months, try and bed it in. You might not see too much of a change. It might actually be the perfect thing, almost only losing Klopp, who's obviously a massive guy to lose. But, you know, you're keeping Pep and the rest of the staff, then it's as little as a transition as possible, I guess. But no, I fully expect them all to still leave, and I expect a new coach to come in.
I think maybe Ruben Amorim, I could see him maybe being a fit there. I don't think they'll end up going down the English route with Potter or Southgate. And Derby doesn't seem to be the choice, according to a very reliable Ornstein. Who do you think, Cook?
Yeah, see, again, I'm going to have a dig at Liverpool as well because we've been too nice at him. I really do think, Stan, I'm going to have a dig at Liverpool. We've been too nice to him. I think that they will employ Pet Linders. And I think, again, this is maybe the out there choice. I can't see Liverpool paying 15 million for someone. It's just not very Liverpool. It's not. It never has been. And I just can't see it. This is still, Stan, the club that furloughed the staff during a pandemic. So I would not put anything past them. And that's the dig I'm having. And it's not necessarily at the fans, it's at the ownership. And I think the Liverpool fans themselves will say that that was pathetic. And they're not the only ones. Tottenham Hotspur did it as well. But no, I genuinely think that it's the cheap option. FSG are cheap, Stan. Again, same what I said before, I can only look at the data that's been provided beforehand. And everything that is saying to me is that they're going to prioritise other things. And I think that they'll see it as, again, Americans will probably see it as, well, he's been working with Jurgen for ages and now we know definitively we can't get Alonso, that we can backtrack on it, because it wouldn't be hard at all for him to say, you know, I'm going to stay actually, or I'm going to work with a new guy.
Well, it's happened at clubs before where the number two is taken over. I know Barcelona have done that a few times. They've seen success with it, so it's not a completely brand new idea. But, I mean, it is a name. They wouldn't have to pay compensation for him. A name close to your heart, leaving Bayern Munich. Ex-Dortmund, replaced Klopp at Dortmund. Thomas Tuchel, what do you think about that?
I thought he was going to say Mourinho then.
Imagine. No, definitely not. Oh, I think he hates Liverpool more than me.
Yeah, no, he would burn it to the ground. It would be class. It would be class. He would burn it to the ground. Tuchel, I think it would be a very smart signing for Liverpool. I genuinely think that, again, you wouldn't have to pay any fee. I think that's the big thing. And I think that he's a world-class manager. I think that Tuchel, he's got back-to-back Champions League finals with different teams. And the two teams that he did get to the Champions League final was a completely disjointed, spineless Paris Saint-Germain one. And then a Chelsea team that was full of kit. So credit to him. I think he's a top manager. And I think that I've said it on a previous podcast when Ten Hag's job was maybe a bit more under threat, Stan. I said that he'd be the perfect manager to get United back to the promised land in terms of, I think that if they were to give him money and time, he would be definitely a guy that could go to Old Trafford and take that weight on his shoulders. I think he's a top manager. And if he went to Liverpool or United, I would be so unhappy because I just know he would do really well there. But I think that would be a very good one, Stan. I hope it doesn't happen. But yeah, Thomas Tuchel to Liverpool would be crazy. But genuinely a viable option, which is mental to say. Tuchel to Liverpool. What a mad timeline. Right, listeners, that music can only mean one thing. It is, of course, the bet of the week. And it is all 3 o'clock this week in the bet of the week. So starting off at Villa Park, we've got Aston Villa versus Brentford. Going to go for both teams to score. Result, Aston Villa in that one. Then headed down to Merseyside, Everton versus Burnley. Going to go for an Everton home win at Goodison Park. Then Fulham versus Newcastle, I'm going to go both teams to score, no draw at Craven Cottage. And then last but not least, Wolves versus West Ham, I'm going to go for Gary O'Neill's side to win at home. So Aston Villa versus Brentford, both teams to score, Aston Villa win. Then Everton versus Burnley, just going to go Everton match result. Fulham, Newcastle, both teams to score, no draw. And then Wolves to beat West Ham. And they are all at 3 o'clock. And Stan, what can the listeners do with that?
They can shove it up the rafters. Hello and welcome back, Cookie Pod listeners. And we're going to go straight into the Saturday half 12. I didn't manage to catch this one myself. I was enjoying myself at Haydock Racecourse. But Cook, you watch this one. It was a 7-goal thriller with penalties, red cards, VAR controversy, concussion, the lot. So, 4-3 Newcastle. The first thing I'll ask you, Cook, were Newcastle worthy winners?
Definitely in the second half. This game was mental. I thought West Ham put themselves in the pole position. In the first half, they were 2-1 up. Kudos. Basically, in a nutshell, West Ham were just playing on the counter-attack. They were 3-1 up at one point. And I turned to Robbie, a friend of the pod, and I said, how are these 3-1 up? They've literally done nothing. And the third goal that Bowen scored was a half chance on his weak foot, maybe about 20 yards out. So, yeah, they were 3-1 up away from home, and they just stopped going forward. Like, the second half, basically, the rule of thumb that this West Ham team followed in the first half that worked so well for them was the classic Antonio Conte / Moise. Absorb and counter. But the thing for the system to work is you've got to counter. You've got to be able to get out. And these couldn't put three passes together after that third goal went in. And then Isak scored his second penalty of the day, tucked it away nicely. Harvey Barnes comes off, literally, I think he comes on maybe in the 75th minute or so, scores two goals. The winning goal is an absolutely outrageous one. Him finally showing his worth off the bench and fully showing that he probably should be starting if he can stay fit in that Newcastle side, because he offers so much on the break and he's such a direct runner. And I'm a big fan of Harvey Barnes. And I think last year, Stan, when Leicester was in the Prem, we're still talking about him essentially being in the England squad the year before. Sorry, not last year, for the Euros. So, sorry, not for the Euros, for the World Cup. Sorry, tell a lie. But yeah, Harvey Barnes, great player, really good off the bench. 4-3, West Ham definitely threw this game away. But Newcastle showing spirit. They did something very similar against Luton at home. They managed to draw that game. This game, they eventually won 4-3. But yeah, the West Ham fans will be so really annoyed in this. They really will be, especially because now with the game in hand, Newcastle can go above them. The 1 point behind them, 43 to 44 points. And like I said, if Newcastle win that game in hand, they can actually go seventh above West Ham. So Stan, as a West Ham perspective... Sorry, from a West Ham perspective, this is not good for David Moyes, is it?
No, it's not. I mean, we've already spoken about it. The fans, well, not all of them, but some fans are on his back, which as a neutral, as an outsider, I can't understand, considering the fact that West Ham are in the conversation for European football again, the three in the Europa League again. They won the first trophy last season in, I don't know, our lifetime at least. Yet the next season, because they're not sixth or whatever they expect to be qualifying for the Champions League, they've got fans on his back. Now, I understand, obviously, you want to enjoy watching your team play football, but at the end of the day, you know, he's getting results. He's shown that with the position in the table, with Newcastle, as you've said, being below West Ham. Newcastle were one of the teams that qualified for the Champions League last season. So to leapfrog them, be a couple of places above them is impressive. They've had some big results this season, but it comes down to the play style, I think, with David Moyes. But you've also got to be careful what you wish for. They've done it once with Moyes and got rid of him. For Pellegrini, a Premier League winning manager, and they were right down there playing nice football. But because they're doing that, they're easy to beat. And they were right down there. They got Moyes back in, and Moyes has been there for the last few years and done what he's done. So I think they'll be really tentative about repeating, you know, lightning striking twice and getting in maybe foreign name, maybe, you know, a sexier name, should we say, and it going wrong, and then needing David Moyes to come and save them again in 2026. So who knows where West Ham, but obviously in this particular game, to be 3-1 up in the second half and to lose 4-3 isn't good. Not, you know, it doesn't matter who you're playing. You could be away at City, and if you're 3-1 up in the second half and you end up losing it, it's obviously bitterly disappointing. But at the end of the day, West Ham are still above Newcastle. It's still in their hands to qualify for European football again. So, you know, we'll see. I just think, like I say, I think the big thing for West Ham that I would say to you is be careful what you wish for in that sense. But, look, I mean, a couple of penalties. There was a red card, I believe, was Fabian Schardin with a head injury when somebody scored or something happened. I mean, do you want to talk us through any of that? Was any of it controversial? I know there was many a VAR situation in this game.
Yeah, like I said, I was watching it with Robbie, and he didn't really understand what had happened at first, but basically what happened was Shar had fouled somebody, but in the process of fouling someone, he basically got a smack in the face, really. So they'd give a free kick. Shar was down with a head injury, but he'd give the foul away. West Ham took a free kick and eventually scored, but Shar was waiting for treatment because he'd been like scratched in the eye or poked in the eye or whatever. But the ref didn't basically... What should have happened was the ref should have just said, you can't take it quickly. Someone's down with like a head injury. Even though it's his face, it's his head. But yeah. I know it sounds weird, but yeah, it is true. But yeah, it was weird that it counted, and it was probably justice that they didn't end up winning this game. But the first half, West Ham were excellent. Like I said, the counter-attacking was there. Bowen, as soon as that third goal goes in, you just see West Ham naturally drop 20 yards. And you just think when Newcastle start getting chance after chance after chance, that isn't like a pop shot from 30 yards. It's a clear cut. Oh, that's a good save. Oh, they've hit the post. Oh, he's at the bar. Like, because they did. They hit the bar and the post a few times as well. It could have been 5-3. It could have been 6-3 in the second half. They were so poor, West Ham. And I think that, I just think it's the story of their season, West Ham. They could go and do something mad and go and have a big say in the title race later on in the season. You really wouldn't be surprised. And they could probably go to somewhere like Luton and get beat 4-0 and you still wouldn't be surprised. That's the thing with West Ham. They're such a strange team, Stav.
And so, obviously, as we know, Anthony Gordon got sent off. So he'll miss the next game against Everton, which I'm sure that the Evertonians will be happy to see him not play, with him obviously being an ex-player as well. And Harvey Barnes scoring, did he score twice? Was it 3-3 and 4-3? So a bit of a coming-of-age moment there in his Newcastle career, and an opportunity now for him to start the next game and maybe make that Scotland squad for the Euros. But
interesting, yeah, very interesting, because Harvey Barnes, I believe we were talking about this the other day, he's got one cap, I want to say. Well, that's what Football Manager told me anyway when I signed him. But yeah, Harvey Barnes has got one cap. He is eligible for Scotland, as was Anthony Gordon, as is Tino Livramento. So there's some good players that can qualify for Scotland. And I just think that if you're in one of those positions where it's so competitive, like at right back, if you're a right back like Livramento, I'm looking at the people in front of me, even though I can play left back, I'm thinking I could go and play for Scotland at a major tournament and probably play it for at least four of them. Whereas like in the England one, I could maybe go and play one and be a squad player. I just think that it's a short career. If you're really that bothered about playing internationally and winning something potentially, or even just say, I played at the Euros, I played at the World Cup, then they need to do it. But if they're like someone like Aaron Wan-Bissakistan, I know he obviously plays for United, but he's still not to be capped, am I right in saying?
Yeah, no, still eligible for Congo, yeah.
Wild. So like, again, I think if you're in some spot like that where you are a Wan-Bissaka or a Livramento or a Barnes, go and play for your other country if you're that bothered about it. I know it's a little bit different with Wan-Bissaka, exactly like the Congo's not up the road. But again, if you're playing for someone in the British Isles, I think it just makes sense, really. And it's hard for me not to be biased with my dad obviously being from Scotland, but I just think that it would make the team a lot better. I think it would make Scotland more competitive. And again, the bottom line, if you're bothered about it, do it. But I just think that it's a little bit sad waiting for England to say that I might be the seventh choice. I don't know. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I definitely get what you mean. And I mean, finally caught, obviously, Newcastle with a huge win there. Do you see them playing European football next season? They currently sit eighth. Point off West Ham with a game in hand, 5 points off United. Do you see them getting Europa League football next season or conference, or do you think they'll still, will they end up getting usurped by somebody else? I mean, it's tight there. There's only 3 points, I believe, 4 points between 8th and 12th. So, you know, are they going to go up or down in your opinion? Do you think this will be a catalyst for the rest of the season?
I mean, looking at the fixtures now, they've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8... So looking at the fixtures, they've got 8 left. It's quite favourable, I think. They've got Everton at home, Fulham away, Spurs at home, Palace away, Sheffield United at home, Burnley away, Brighton at home, Brentford away. I think those are all very winnable games. I really do. Even the Tottenham game, I think, at St James's is very winnable for Newcastle. So looking at the fixtures compared to the people around them without giving it an extensive look, I think they are very nice for Newcastle. And I think that any form of Europe for Newcastle should be considered an achievement this season, with taking on the Champions League and obviously with the situation with Tonali, who's a club record signing. Obviously, not going to go into detail about him, but obviously doing what he's done. But at the same time, I think, like I said, I don't think it would be cutting Newcastle slack if I didn't say that if they didn't get Europe, it would be a failure, because I think it would. But even if they get the Conference League, I think that that's a good season for Howe and probably enough to keep him in his job if I'm the Saudis.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think if they end up getting, like you say, I think European competition, European football next season, they'll be completely fine, I think, as well. So I completely agree with that. And West Ham, finally, be careful what you wish for with that David Moyes, because you might need him again in 2 years. welcome back. And although I'm not sure Cut wants to talk about it, we are going to go down to Stamford Bridge. 3 o'clock kickoff on Saturday. They drew 2-2 with a 10-man Burnley, with a managerless, touchline managerless at least, Burnley. I mean, the big stat that came out after this one was that Chelsea have taken the lead in 7 of the last 7 games, and they've lost the lead in every single time. So, I mean, what do you think about that stat? And obviously, what do you think about dropping 2 huge points here at home against Burnley?
Yeah, it's so annoying. And to quote Cole Palmer, we kill ourselves every week, and we do. We are our own worst enemy. It's not often you will see Chelsea concede a goal this season where we've been like passed apart or someone's just like done something mental and it's gone in. It'll be a goal where someone's just let someone get across them, or it'll be a free man off a corner, or it'll be someone trying to play offside. It'll be something stupid like that just because the team's so disjointed. But there's no excuses, genuinely. You should be beating this team. And unfortunately, Stan, we ended up drawing this game because of a guy that's been so solid for us since he came in the summer, and that's Petrovic, the goalkeeper. It was an individual mistake by him, but yeah, it's such a shame because he's been excellent this season. He's kept us in some massive games, and I think if you were to ask any Chelsea fan that's watched him this season and said that he's made the mistake, you'd be very surprised. But yeah, very unfortunate for Chelsea. Palmer scores 2. Scores a Panenka penalty as well, Stan, which was just absolutely outrageous. He was waiting probably about 5 minutes for the VAR. And I was just thinking, I don't like how long this is taking. I don't like how long he's had the ball in his hands. And for him to just do something like that is ridiculous. And Stan, Cole Palmer, obviously we spoke about how bad Chelsea were there. We're going to talk about how good Burnley were, because there was a lot of positives to take from that Burnley performance in a little while. But I just want to speak to you, Stan, about Cole Palmer. Again, excellent performance in this game. He's just doing some extremely good numbers. Panenka penalty from the lad. Where would Chelsea be without Cole Palmer this season?
Well, even lower in the table. I mean, the mid-table with Cole Palmer. So, I mean, maybe it would have been a 6-pointer with Burnley if Cole Palmer hadn't signed. But no, obviously, he's doing really, really well, isn't he? I mean, there's a good chance he ends up going to the Euros. And you know, if your team's finishing 10th, but you're in the Euro squad, I mean, I suppose it shows how good of a season you've had and how good of a player you are. It's just a shame that he didn't come and sign for his boyhood club in United. But, you know, you never know. That might happen. We don't know what the FA have got up the sleeve for Chelsea just yet. So we'll see. United might come in. But, no, he's done brilliantly. I mean, he's been so effective this season with goals and assists, like you say. I mean, Chelsea without him would be really, really struggling. And like I say, good chance he goes to the Euros too, which, you know, a brilliant signing from Manchester City, who, again, I don't really understand why they sold him, especially with Doku not doing too great at the moment and him being a homegrown player for your academy. I mean, for me, you're keeping him every single time rather than bringing somebody else in. But I suppose they've not got that culture at City that, you know, I'm used to at United with you know, using your own, I suppose. But yeah, I mean, brilliant. I mean, Cut, have you got anything else to say about Cole Palmer that I've not just said?
Yeah, I just want to say it's criminal this year where we would be without Cole Palmer. I think that he has just been a breath of fresh air, along with, again, Petrovic, who's been excellent. Malo Gusto has been excellent for Chelsea this season. Even players like Nicholas Jackson, but Palmer's just been absolutely ridiculous. I saw a stat the other day. It was 31 starts for Chelsea, and he's got 30 goals and assists. So just ridiculous numbers again in a team that's struggling. And it's similar to Manu at United. The team itself is struggling, but they're still managing to shine and put on clinics and man of the match performances. But yeah, it's ridiculous. It's 10 goals, 8 assists in the league. I think he'll end up double digits in the league. He's already double digits, goals and assists in all competitions, and the sky's the limit for him. But I want to talk about Burnley, Stan. They got fucked over a little bit in this game. The penalty that Palmer Panenka'd, it was never a penalty. Asignon, who received a second yellow card for this, let alone wasn't a penalty, it wasn't a yellow card either. Kompany gets frustrated, gets sent off, and then Chelsea just collapses. I was saying to you, I believe, over the weekend, and a few other people, that this Burnley at home game is a nightmare game for Chelsea, especially coming back from the international break, where everyone's been here, there and everywhere, and it's a low block, and we struggle to play against low block, we really do, and Burnley were excellent. They defended really, really well. They could have actually won it at 2-2. Jay Rodriguez missed an absolute sitter. I don't know if anyone's seen it. They hit the bar. He's literally no one near him, 8 yards out. It's just a reactionary shot, and he skies it over the bar. So thank you, J-Rod, for not putting us to the sword when you really should have. And if 10-man Burnley had beaten Chelsea away, I wouldn't have been surprised if Poch would have got out there still as the Chelsea manager, because somehow we didn't win that game. We were dominant. We absolutely battered him, and we ended up drawing. And it's complete story of our season. But credit to Burnley. Bellamy on the side really got them going. He was just looking as good a manager as company in terms of, like, the players were responding to everything he said. They were wide-eyed and just eager to hear what he said. They defended really, really well. The goalkeeper, ex-Man City player as well, he only cost him $3 million. He's the guy that got him promoted in the Championship. I forget his name. He was excellent as well, pulling off some really good saves. And it makes you think, why did they go and spend $25 million on James Trafford when the year before they spent $3 million on a Man City Academy product who was just as good and won you the league? So I don't get that one, Stan.
Well, I can't explain that one, Cook, without maybe saying that might be the 116th allegation, but allegedly, of course. Then Vincent Kompany, ex-Manchester City captain, buying a keeper that had been on loan at Bolton in League One for $25 million whilst Manchester United couldn't flog Dean Henderson, who's got England caps and was number one for us at some point and has played for Sheffield United week in, week out in the Prem. But there we go. It doesn't make sense. It also doesn't make sense why they've kept him in net for so long with Muric being on the bench. I think he started the last two or three for them, and they're undefeated in all of them. 5 points from the last nine for Burnley, a win and two draws. Huge, huge results for them at the moment. I mean, there's rumours of Everton getting another minus 5 point deduction, which would pull them right back down into that race. I think Burnley are 4 points from safety. I mean, Kurt, you've watched them firsthand at the weekend. They've been written off. Can we write them off, or do Burnley have a chance now? Are they going on a bit of a run now? Have they finally found how to get results in the Premier League? Are they going to end up pulling off the great escape?
No. And it pains me to say that, because I love Burnley away. But I just think that they're worse than other teams, and it's probably too late. I think that company's pride has probably already put him down. And I say his pride in terms of the goalkeeping situation with Muric. I feel like he's almost shot himself in the foot buying this goalkeeper that's evidently not ready for the Premier League. He doesn't even look like he'd cope in the Championship. He gives me Meslier vibes, Stan, in terms of his body type. He's quite skinny, but he's like very easy on the eye, passing-wise. Yeah, I think it's poor scouting, I do, from Burnley. I think it's a waste of money, because they didn't need a goalkeeper in that department when you could have literally had that same gamble on Muric, whatever his name is. I do apologise. But I also think, Stan, that the glimmer of hope, ironically, that Burnley have has came from Chelsea in the form of Datro Fofana, who has done really, really well on loan there since he's joined after a nightmare at Union Berlin in the first half of the season. So do I think they'll finish in the bottom three? Yes. Do I think that they'll go down swinging now as opposed to just going down playing the exact same way every week? Yeah, I think the penny has dropped, but it's definitely too late. Welcome back, listeners. Hope you enjoyed that footy chat with me and Stan. Lastly, to finish off the pod, we've got a game. I've got three Who Am I's. No Jim this week. It's Stan versus Stan, or you versus Stan. You can pretend to be on the pod this week. You can fill in for Jim and maybe take his place one day, because we are actively shopping out his position on the pod, because he is always in the United Arab Emirates, allegedly. But Stan, who am I this week? We've got three players. As always, we're going to start with player number one, and he is retired. I was born on the 9th of August, 1977, making me 46 years old.
46. Oh, okay. 20 years ago in his pomp. Okay. Who was playing 20 years ago? Nuno Gomez. Euro 2004.
It's not Nuno Gomez.
No, okay.
Okay. So clue number two, I played in France, Italy, England, Germany, United States, and I retired in India.
Oh, okay.
So I'll say it again, but a little bit slower. I've played in France, Italy, England, Germany, United States, and retired in India.
Okay. No, I don't know who that is, just so you know. France, Italy, England. That's what I'm trying to focus on. Let's go with David Ginola.
Good guess. It's not David Ginola.
It's not. Okay.
This may help.
Okay. I hope it does.
My ex-teammates include Andrea Pirlo, Elano, Theo Walcott, and Owen Hargreaves.
Right. Andrea Pirlo. Okay. So he's either Italian or he played with Pirlo in Italy. Now, the problem is with Pirlo is he played for AC, Inter, and Juve, but he's also played in New York. Can you name them again, Pirlo?
Yeah. So again, he hasn't played for any of the national teams that these people played for, so that's your clue. So he's played with Andrea Pirlo, Elano, Owen Hargreaves, and Theo Walcott.
Okay. Now, Elano obviously has played for City. He's played obviously in Brazil, but this guy's not played in Brazil. I think he's played in Utah. I think he played for Shakhtar or someone, Elano, or am I making that up? Oh, he's played in India. So he's played in India with Elano, which gives me nothing. Played in Italy with Pirlo. He's probably been at Arsenal with Walcott.
Ooh.
So I'm reckoning this guy's, well, he's French because none of these are French. Who was the fourth guy? Walcott, Elano, Pirlo.
Owen Hargreaves.
Owen Hargreaves. Okay, so that's Bayern, I'm guessing. Is it? Maybe. Bayern or United too, I suppose. Oh, I think I know who it is. Is it Mikel Silvestre?
Well done. It is Mikel Silvestre. Well done, Stan. And then clue number four was I represented France at Euro 2004 and also represented them at the 2002 and 2006 World Cup, finishing up as a runner-up in the latter to Italy. And then clue number five was I played under both Sir Alex Ferguson and Arsene Wenger for Manchester United and Arsenal, respectively.
Yes, Mikel Silvestre got in from Inter after the treble season, I think. So, yeah, we Pirlo, though.
Yeah. So, as always, Stan, Andrea Pirlo at Inter Milan, Elano at Chennaiyin FC in India, Theo Walcott at Arsenal, and Owen Hargreaves at Man United.
Lovely.
Player number two, Stan, you got 3 points on the first one, so three out of a possible five.
Lovely.
Okay, I was born on the 14th of December, 1979, making me 44 years young.
Wow. A couple of years younger than Mikel. So we'll go with Gabriel Heinz.
Beans, Heinz. It's not him. Clue number two, I've played in France, Scotland, England, Italy, and I retired in Greece. So just to recap, again, this is in chronological order of his professional career. Started in France, then went to Scotland, then England, then Italy, and then retired in Greece.
Okay, so Scotland is probably going to be one of the big two before coming down south to England. So let's go with. There's only one name I can think of, and I doubt he started in France, but we'll do him. I'll go with Stylian Petrov. He went to Villa from Celtic.
Yeah, it's not Stylian Petrov, but he did go from Villa to Celtic. No, vice versa, Celtic to Villa.
Celtic to Villa, yeah.
Okay, clue number three. My ex-teammates include This guy is retired. I don't know if I specified that at the start.
Yes.
So my ex-teammates include Nacho Novo. Do you know him, Stan?
Yeah, Spanish guy for Rangers.
Oh, good lad. Good lad.
Yes, I do. Number 10, I think he was, wasn't he?
Look at that. You're just fucking flexing.
Hey, a font of all knowledge.
So good. So Nacho Novo, Alessandro Del Piero, Karim Benzema, and Sidney Govou.
Oh, God. Okay.
Nacho Novo, Alessandro Del Piero, Karim Benzema, and Sidney Govou.
You can have the countries he's played in. Now, I'm going to assume Alessandro was in Italy with Juve. Nacho Novo was at Rangers. So Rangers and Juventus. Okay. I'm feeling like there should... So this is at a time when obviously Rangers, I feel, were in like the Champions League and things like that, and they were doing all right. They were on the Wednesday nights on ITV and stuff like that. Okay. And the other two were Benzema and Govou. So Sidney Govou played for Lyon. And maybe Benzema did too, since this guy's never played in Spain. Unless this guy's French and he's played with one of them with the national team, which is possible, but he could have both been Lyon too.
Govou.
But Lyon... Rangers, Lyon, Juve is what I'm thinking.
Govou played in Greece down at the end of his career.
Oh, did he? Right, okay. That's not going to help me. That's not going to help me. But this guy didn't play in Spain, so he's either French or he's played at Lyon. He's played for Juve and Rangers as well.
Might be both.
Could be both. Rangers, French players for Rangers.
I'll tell you what I will do is, as a bit of a who am I first time ever, I'll give you an extra ex-teammate from one of his different countries.
Oh, wow, okay, thank you.
So you like that?
I do like that.
Alan Shearer.
Oh, God.
So, again, Sidney Govou played with this man in Greece. I won't tell you the team, but I'll tell you he played with him in Greece. Nacho Novo played with him in Scotland. Alessandro Del Piero in Italy. Karim Benzema in France, and then Alan Shearer in England.
Right, so this guy went from Rangers to Newcastle.
He did.
Okay.
Newcastle for two seasons with Shearer.
Okay. From Rangers. Is it Boomsong?
Well done. Well done. Well done. Jean-Alain Boomsong.
Boomsong.
Yeah, so clue number four was in 2005 I joined Newcastle for $8 million for Rangers, striking up a partnership with Titus Bramble.
Yeah, Bramble and Boomsong.
And then clue number five, I think you'll like this because you didn't know, my older cousin is Liverpool legend David Ngog.
Wow, is he? I did not know that, but we love that.
Boomsong.
It's Jon Allen Boomsong. Yeah, I do remember Boomsong.
Yeah, so Sidney Govou at Panathinaikos for his teammates. Nacho Novo at Rangers. Alessandro Del Piero at Juventus when he was in Serie B. And then Karim Benzema at Olympique Lyon.
Nice.
Nice footballing teammates for him, innit?
That is good, to be fair. Some great names, though, for a... pretty bad centre half, from what I recall, anyway.
See what I love when I do the research for this? How many players just went to Juve for like 1 year because it was in Serie B? Just
because they were skint, yeah. Just because you could say you played for Juventus.
Yeah, and won Serie B. Class. Okay, player number three, Stan. Player number three. Active. So that is the first active player of the day, Stan. I was born on the 4th of April, 1986, making me 37 years old.
Okay. 37. See, I really struggle now because I don't play FIFA or anything like that. I really struggle now with how old people actually are. 37. So, I mean... let's go with Luis Suarez. Is he about 37?
He probably is about 37. It's not him, though. Okay, so clue number two, in order, I've played in Scotland, Russia, England, and I currently play in the Scottish second tier with Ayr United.
Okay, Scotland, Russia, England. Okay, and I've got an idea. I've mentioned FIFA. Now I've got an idea of who I think this guy is. But I won't say it just yet. We'll get my favourite bit out the way and we'll do his ex-teammates include.
Nice.
That's for the listeners as well, in case they haven't got it. We'll open it up.
That's class for you. That's like pinning someone's shoulders to the mat and lifting them up at two when you've got them beat. Fair play. My ex-teammates include Kim Kallstrom, Lee Catamole, Jan Venegora Hesselink, and Samuel Eto'o.
Okay.
So varied.
Now, if it's the guy who I'm thinking, so I'll say...
Go on, who is it? Put us out of our misery.
So I think it's Aidan McGeady.
Yes, well done.
The great five-star skiller with the McGeady spin. Now, Kim Kallstrom. He definitely played in Russia. I think, did McGeady play for Spartak Moscow?
Yeah, well done.
Is that where he played with Kallstrom?
Yeah.
Then we'll go with... Katamol was obviously at Sunderland. Jan Venegor was at Celtic.
Well done.
And was it Everton for Eto?
Oh, class.
Yeah, see. Well, I mean, I did completely forget he played for Everton, but that's a very Everton signing, that Aidan McGeady.
It was the same point when he had like Mo Besic and like Wim.
Yeah, them, yeah. Like Roberto, late Moyes, early Martinez kind of vibes.
Clue number four was, I scored my first international goal for the Republic of Ireland in Martin O'Neill's first game as manager. And then clue number five was, I famously have a FIFA skill name after me known as the McGeady Spin. So well done, Stan. You know what? We'll give you 4 points because you did know it after clue number two this week.
I did.
But Stan, out of a possible 15, you did actually get 10 this week.
See, healthy score.
Healthy score indeed. So the Who Am I's for this week, just to recap, we had Mikel Sylvest, we had Jean-Alain Boumsong, and then we finished with Aidan McGeady.
Now with me and you in that, that would be one hell of a five-a-side team, I think.
It would be.
It'd be right up there McGeady in the Warrington League.
Right, listeners. Hope you all enjoyed that Who Am I. We're just winding down here. Just to let you know where you can find us when we're not making pods. So across Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, we are available under the handle Cookie Podcast. But in the word cookie, it's 3-0. So it's COOOKIE Podcast for TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. And if you don't have time to listen to a full pod in its entirety, just type in on YouTube, Cookie Podcast Clips. But if you do have the time, search in wherever you get your podcast. That's the way the cookie crumbles. Leave a 5-star review. Pinch your significant other's phone. Give us a 5-star. Leave a comment. It really helps us get up the algorithm and do more pods for you lot. So it's been episode 219. And that's the way the cookie crumbles.
Yeah,